Welcome to Defenders, the teaching class of Dr. William Lane Craig. Today, Creation and Evolution, Part 8. For more resources from Dr. Craig, go online to reasonablefaith.org.
We've been talking about different interpretations of Genesis chapter 1, and last time we began the functional creation interpretation of John Walton. And you remember this interpretation says that Genesis 1 is not a narrative of what Walton calls God's material creation of things in the world. That is, say, bringing these things into existence where they didn't exist before. Rather, he argues it's a matter of what he calls functional creation. And his claim is that creation in the ancient Near East in general, and in Genesis 1 in particular, is functional creation, simply specifying the various functions that things will fulfill in an orderly system that God has in mind. And last time, we began our assessment of this view by pointing out some terminological problems with Walton's view of material and functional creation. And I did this by comparing it to Aristotle's analysis of causation in terms of efficient causation, which is the cause that brings into being its effect, the productive cause of something, material causation, which is the stuff out of which something is made, formal causation, which is a sort of pattern or information content of the effect, and final causation, which is the end or the goal or purpose for which something is created. And I pointed out that when Walton talks about material creation, although you might at first think this is material causation, it's not. It's really talking about what Aristotle called efficient causation, producing the effect in being, bringing something into existence. Whereas functional creation would be specifying the final causes of things, the ends for which they exist. And Walton's terminology, I argued, can be confusing, misleading, and inaccurate, because you might think in order for something to be the object of God's material causation, that God has to create that thing ex nihilo. He has to create the matter out of which something is made. And that's not the case. Inefficient causation, there may well be a material cause as well. When a carpenter creates a chair, for example, the lumber, the wood, is the material cause, but the carpenter is the efficient cause. And there is also a final cause. The chair is made for someone to sit on, for example, and it has a formal cause, certain information that's embodied in that chair. So I'm not saying that Aristotle and his analysis is correct and that Walton is somehow to be measured by his approximation to Aristotle. No, I'm simply saying that Aristotle gives us a more subtle and nuanced analysis of causation, and it's helpful to see exactly what kind of causation Walton is talking about when he says functional creation. That's clearly final causation, the end or the purpose for which something is created. And when he talks about material creation, he's really talking about efficient causation. And so what Walton has to show is that Genesis chapter 1 is concerned exclusively with functional creation or final causation, that it has nothing to do with God's efficient causation of the dry land, the vegetation, the fruit trees, the animals, the sea creatures, and man, that it is purely and exclusively final causation. Otherwise, it could be both. It could be both material creation and functional creation. And Walton wants to maintain that that's not the case. It's not a both and. It is exclusively functional creation. Now, with that terminological, clarification, let me, before moving to the next point, just make sure there's no comprehension type question that you might have about these distinctions. Yes, Tom.
I guess he would say then, or we're to take from what you're saying, that he just says Genesis just doesn't address the efficient cause or the material causation. Is that right? It only addresses the functional. Is that
right? That's right. Yes, Jim, down here.
Does Walton believe that matter is eternal?
No, he believes, as a Christian, that God created the world ex nihilo. He is an evangelical Christian, but he does not believe it on the basis of Genesis 1. So he would believe that on other grounds. But he doesn't think that Genesis 1 teaches creatio ex nihilo. It would be consistent with Genesis 1 to say that matter is eternal in the past. Any other comprehension type question? These are good questions. All right, having made that terminological clarification, I want to move on now to a discussion of ancient Near Eastern cosmology. Ancient Near Eastern cosmology. Walton claims that when we look at the ancient Near Eastern creation myths, we find that, quote, people in the ancient world believed that something existed not by virtue of its material properties, but by virtue of its having a function in an ordered system, end quote. Now, does the evidence bear out this claim? Well, I think that the answer is clearly no. Walton points out, and I quote, nearly all the creation accounts of the ancient world start their story with no operational system in place. Egyptian texts talk about a singularity, not in the modern scientific sense, but he says in the sense of nothing having yet been separated out. All is inert and undifferentiated, end quote. Creation in these ancient Near Eastern myths often begins with the primeval waters, out of which the dry land or the gods emerge. Now, you'll remember that when we talked about creatio ex nihilo, we said that the typical pattern of these ancient creation myths was when blank, and you fill in the blank, was not yet, then God or the gods, blank. When blank was not yet, then God did something. Then God blank, and you fill in the blank. And a good example of this is a text that Walton himself furnishes on the founding of the city of Eridu. Here's what this ancient creation myth says. I'll quote it. No holy house, no house of the gods had been built in a pure place. No reed had come forth. No tree had been created. No brick had been laid. No brick mold had been created. No house had been built. No city had been created. No city had been built. No settlement had been founded. Nippur had not been built. Ekur had not been created. Uruk had not been built. Eanna had not been created. The depths had not been built. Eridu had not been created. No holy house, no house of the gods, no dwelling for them had been created. All the world was sea. The spring in the midst of the sea was only a channel. Then was Eridu built. Esagala was created. Here you see this typical form of these ancient Near Eastern myths. When blank was not yet, then was something or other created. And we find this typical pattern in Genesis chapter 2, verses 5 to 7, where Genesis says, when no plant of the field was yet in the earth, and no herb of the field had yet sprung up, then the Lord God created man. Genesis 2, 5 to 7 has that typical form of these ancient creation myths. Now, the descriptions of the primordial world in pagan myths were not descriptions of a world of material objects in which the animals and the plants and the buildings and the people existed, but they lacked a function. Rather, they're descriptions of a state in which distinct material objects of any sort do not exist at all. As Walton says, it's an undifferentiated, inert state from which distinct things had not been separated out. And therefore, the creation of an orderly system of functioning objects most certainly did involve the material creation of those objects, not just the specification of functions for material objects that were already present. So when Walton concludes, and I quote, "Consequently, to create something or cause it to exist in the ancient world means to give it a function, not material properties," he's drawing a false dichotomy which is foreign to these ancient texts. So, when it comes then to Genesis chapter 1, in order for this text to feature only functional creation, you must imagine that the dry land, the vegetation, the trees, the sea creatures, the birds, all the animals, even man, were all there right from the beginning, but they weren't functioning in an ordered system. And it seems to me that such an interpretation is implausible, not to say ridiculous. It would require us to regard as literally false all of the statements about the darkness, the primeval ocean, the emergence of the dry land and separation of the seas, the earth's bringing forth vegetation and fruit trees, the waters bringing forth sea creatures, the earth's bringing forth animals, and God's making man. Now, notice that Walton cannot say, well, these things cannot exist apart from an orderly functioning system. Because the minute you say that, then you admit that functional creation involves material creation as well. And that's the traditional interpretation of Genesis 1, that God both brings these things into existence and he specifies their functions in an orderly system. Now, just how bizarre Walton's interpretation is becomes evident from his statement that the material creation of the biosphere could have gone on for eons prior to Genesis 1:1. And then he thinks that sometime in the relatively recent past, there came a literal period of seven consecutive 24-hour days during which God specified the functions of the various things existing at that time. Now, Walton claims that he's giving, remember, a literal interpretation of Genesis 1, but this is the farthest thing from a literal interpretation of the text that you can have. It would imply that all of the descriptions of the world that are given at the beginning of and during that relatively recent week are all literally false. If you ask, well, what would an eyewitness have observed during that week? Walton either begs off answering the question, or he says the answer is that the world before those 7 days would have lacked only, one, humanity in God's image, and two, God's presence in his cosmic temple. In other words, everything would have looked exactly the same, except that the people who existed then wouldn't have been functioning as God's vice regents here on earth, and God had not yet specified the function of the cosmos to serve as his cosmic temple. An eyewitness during that week would not have observed, and in fact did not observe, any change whatsoever in the world. Any question or comment about the views of creation in ancient Near Eastern cosmology and in Genesis 1 in particular? Okay, Brad?
I think it's interesting, the Toledoth theory of who wrote Genesis says that that first chapter was written by God up to chapter 2, verse 3. Through four, because the Toledoth statement there is, this is the account of the heavens, and that declares the author of that first part of Genesis 1 and the first part of 2. So the first written by Adam is 2:5, And that is similar to the Near Eastern format of the ancient Near Eastern myths. Right.
Yes, that is correct. And you remember when we talked about Creatio ex nihilo, we talked about how Genesis 1:1 is so different from the ancient creation myths in that it breaks that pattern. It has this absolute statement, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And so I refer you back to the notes where we discussed that. Any other comment? Yes, here.
I don't know if you mentioned, did you say that John Walton does deny that Adam is the progenitor of the human race? Does he?
I don't know Walton's work apart from this book,
okay.
The Lost World of Genesis 1.
Okay.
And so I'm only interacting with his views as expressed in this book. And in this book, he doesn't say anything to suggest that.
Okay, thanks.
I don't know what his views are in general. So if we're to adopt a reading of the text, which is so at odds with its surface interpretation or its prima facie descriptions of the world, it seems to me that we would need to have very powerful evidence for adopting such an interpretation. So the question is then, well, what evidence does Walton give in favor of this interpretation of Genesis 1 apart from the evidence of ancient Near Eastern cosmology in general? Well, that brings us to the next area, the discussion of the word bara as functional creation. Bara is the Hebrew word for create. And Walton's first argument for his view is that the Hebrew word bara for create concerns functional creation only. And in the book, he provides a chart which lists the approximately 50 passages in the Old Testament where bara is used. And the objects of the verb bara in the Old Testament include things like the heavens and the earth, sea creatures, human beings, the starry host, a cloud of smoke, Israel, the ends of the earth, north and south, a pure heart, disaster, and so forth. And incredibly, from this list, Walton includes, and I quote, "This list shows that grammatical objects of the verb are not easily identified in material terms. And even when they are, it is questionable that the context is objectifying them," end quote. Now, when I looked at this list, I thought precisely the opposite was true. Most of these objects are easily identified as material objects. A cloud of smoke, the stars, human beings, sea creatures. These are clearly material objects. Now, true, some of them are not material objects. For example, a pure heart. Create in me a pure heart, O God. This is not a material object, not the anatomical heart that's in your body. Or the nation of Israel. Or north and south are not material objects. But those are the exceptions in the list. In particular, the three objects of bara in Genesis 1, the heavens and the earth, man, and the sea creatures, especially the sea creatures, seem to be clear cases of the creation of material objects, not just specifying functions. But leave that point aside. Walton's more fundamental mistake is that he fallaciously infers that because the objects of bara are not material objects, therefore bara does not concern material creation. Let me repeat that. He infers that because the objects of bara are not material objects, therefore bara is not material creation. And here I think we see how Walton's misleading terminology comes home to roost. What is material creation? It's not material causation. It's efficient causation. What Walton is talking about is efficient causation. And while he would be right that the creation of immaterial entities like a pure heart or north and south or disaster are not a case of material causation, nevertheless, they are certainly a case of efficient causation. It is God who is said to be the cause of disaster or who creates in you a pure heart. In virtually all of these cases in the list, the object of bara is an object of which God is the efficient cause. God is the efficient cause of the object that he is said to create, whether that is a material object or something immaterial. Now, Walton finds confirmation of his interpretation of bara as purely functional in the fact that bara is never used in conjunction with a material cause of the object. And he takes this to support the idea that only functional creation is involved. But that conclusion just doesn't follow. From the absence of a material cause, all you can infer is that material causation is not always involved. God could create something ex nihilo when he brings something into being. But it doesn't mean that efficient causation is not involved. Indeed, in functional creation, as Walton understands it, the object already exists. It's just given a new function. But none of the objects of bara in the Old Testament that he lists, with the possible exception of the nation of Israel, I would say, with that one exception, none of these things is a case of an existing thing that is simply given a new function. I see the frown on Brad's face. What I meant there is that the people could already exist as material objects, but God would create the nation of Israel by, say, calling these people and constituting them as a kind of national state or political entity. That wouldn't involve the efficient creation of the people. But in every other case in the list, it's clearly a case of efficient causation and therefore material creation. Walton says that the reason the functional interpretation of Genesis 1 is, quote, never considered, unquote, by other scholars, which I think is itself a telling admission. The reason it is never considered by other scholars is because they've been misled by cultural influences of our material culture. Well, I think that's going too far. Such a claim would impugn the scholarly credibility of other scholars of the ancient Near East, Egyptologists and other students of ancient Near Eastern cultures. I suspect that the reason that no one has ever interpreted Genesis 1 this way is because it's just such an obvious misreading of the text that other scholars haven't adopted it. Any comments on that point, then, the point about bara as functional? Yes, Matt.
I read Walton slightly differently, and I'd like to get your comments on it.
Okay.
Basically, what I understood him as saying is just that the people in the ancient Near East asked different questions than we did. Like, when we say God created the universe, then we think of stuff. And then if somebody asks us, like, well, who made it have its purpose for what it does? And we're like, well, of course God. But mm-hmm. we'd kind of look at you strange, like, that's just assumed. And then in the ancient Near East, they did the opposite. Well, who purposed it? Well, God purposed it. Well, who made the stuff? Well, duh, God. And so when he's talking about material, or when he's talking about functional causation or creation, it's not a, they wouldn't have asked the material question, yes or no, was material created? So the Genesis account, and as I'm reading him, and I'd like your comments on this, could work either with a young earth view or an old earth view, that the material could have been created at that moment simply because you're asking
different
questions.
Now, see, what I'm trying to say, Matt, is that because of his misleading terminology, using material creation to talk about what is really efficient causation, it has nothing to do with the creation of the material. When a carpenter makes a chair, he's the efficient cause of the chair. The chair doesn't exist until he makes it. But he doesn't make it out of nothing. He makes it out of lumber. So it's really misleading to think that the question is, well, who made the material out of which this stuff exists? That's not the issue. The issue is, in these ancient Near Eastern myths and in Genesis 1, did these ancient people think that this was just specifying the functions of things, or did they assume that or think that God was actually bringing these things into being? And Walton is very clear that he will not allow a both-and interpretation. He says it is not both-and. He is quite happy to say that all of this stuff existed prior to Genesis 1:1, that the sun was shining, the dinosaurs were flourishing, things were going on. But then, relatively recently, God went through this seven-day period of saying, what's the function of everything? So he is definitely trying to exclude efficient causation from being contemplated in Genesis 1 and think of it as purely functional. So if he's going to maintain that, he's got to show not just that final causation is involved, he's got to show that efficient causation is not involved. You want to hand the mic to Cindy there, and we'll close with this.
What did Walton, is it Walton, is that correct?
Walton.
What does he say about if there was no cause, or function rather, no function of the material prior to the, if there was no function prior to God giving it function in Genesis, what did they do if there was no cause? Did you just have roaming animals? And if the sun had no cause, I don't think you can have that.
I think this is a deep incoherence in his interpretation. When you look at these ancient myths, it's not as though you could have these animals and plants and human beings running about without any function. That would be crazy.
That's their nature. That's what they are.
So it seems to me that material creation and functional creation go hand in hand. It's hand in glove. It's both and. It's not either or. And yet he has to try to say that Genesis 1 is not both and. It is purely functional. And as I say, he actually says that the material creation of these things may have preceded Genesis 1:1.
But they had no function.
Yeah.
Is what he's saying.
Right. The functions start getting specified in verse 2.
Which is illogical.
Which is, I think it's really incoherent. I think he would recognize that would be a misreading of these ancient creation stories and these Egyptian myths. It's very clear that you had these primeval waters, and it's not as though there were people and animals and things going about, but they just were functionless. It was just an undifferentiated state. And what happens then is God creates things and gives them functions at the same time. It's as Aristotle saw, it's a both and. All right. Well, next time we will look at his argument that creation in Genesis 1, in fact, begins only in verse 2 and consists in specifying the functions for the things that God creates.
The copyright for the content of this recording is held by Dr. William Lane Craig. For more, go to reasonablefaith.org.